this is Allison Sheridan of the NoCellaCast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever so slight Macintosh bias. Today is Sunday, November 6, 2011, and this is show number 337. Well, we had a little fun in the live chat room tonight. Don McAllister served me my beer before starting the show here. He and his wife Barbara are here visiting after Blog World Expo, and we decided to have a little fun with the chat room with that. So we're already having a good time, that's for sure. Well, like I said, this week has been pretty hectic. We just got back from Blog World. It was in Los Angeles this year. Now, I'm really torn with whether this is a good conference or not. In the early days, we had the Podcast and Portable Media Expo. This was a tiny little conference of just podcasters, and it was held in a distant suburb of Los Angeles called Ontario. Tiny little town, for LA standards anyway. Well, a few years ago, the Podcast Expo was sold to Blog World Expo, and now we're part of a 4,000 attendee conference. That's cool, because we're all bloggers, right? And the conference does have a track called PodCamp that's actually tailored for us, and the blog sessions work for us as well. I've given a lot of thought to whether this is a good thing or a bad thing, and I think when we had the Portable Media Expo, it was when we were all just figuring it out, and so everybody was kind of on the same playing field. Everybody was talking about what microphone do you use, and you know, are you going to do a blog or not a blog, and how do you do that RSS feed thing? And now I think the technology has matured a lot. I think a lot of the people know how to do it, and Don and I were talking about it, and we were thinking, you know, maybe what it's for now is for us to be the teachers, those of us who've been doing it for a long time. So going in expecting to get a lot of content out for ourselves, maybe that's unrealistic because we already know how to do it. So I think we all got some snippets, but the networking is kind of the big thing for us. I do have to tell you, though, the podcast track was really poorly run. Katie Floyd and I submitted a few papers, and we never heard back from Blog World when they said they would tell us whether we got in or not, so we just assumed that we had not been selected. So then just 2.5 weeks before the show, we got the acceptance letters. Now, this was too late for Katie to make plane reservations and then move around all of her lawyer and stuff, so she had to bow out. Now, the good news is that Adam Christensen of the MacCast stepped in to take her place on the panel that we did. We'll have full video of that in the show at some point. We just got back, so we haven't had a chance to do the video editing. Steve hasn't been able to sit down and attack that just yet. So, you know, the coordinators of the show, they went to great lengths to make sure there were plenty of varied presentations from which to choose. So they had a track for, you know, mommy stuff, a track for travel stuff, a track for military. I mean, they had just all these different tracks, and they had too many tracks. I'm not kidding. The schedule was 3 pages wide for every time slot. And, you know, there were 300 presentations in 3 days. That's really not that good. And because of the lack of planning, many of the sessions had no description at all. A few showed up in more than one place, but the speaker didn't show up. And there were a whole slew of keynotes. Now, one of them, you know, they might have been quite good, and some of the ones that I went to were good, but there were no descriptions to tell you why you really want to go hear this person talk. So I think they tried to do too much in this particular one. But the good news is they had a session at the end of the show where we talked about that kind of stuff. It was really for the podcasters, but we got a chance to talk to the guy that runs the show, and I think he was able to hear some of our opinions on how it went. And I think we were pretty much in concurrence that there were too many tracks. Now, the conference was at the LA Convention Center for the first time this year, and I actually thought that worked really well. I was afraid of this conference being in this giant place, but it actually worked really, really well. The hotels were like 6 to 9 blocks away, but they had shuttles running every 10 minutes during peak times to take us back and forth. Well, except the time it was raining and they didn't come back to get us, so we took a cab. It was like $8 to take a cab, and there were 4 of us, so we were fine. So what did I like about Blog World beyond that? I really liked the show floor. And it really surprised me because it's quite tiny compared to something like, say, Macworld. I mean, it's a tiny little floor. But Steve and I got some really good interviews of some pretty interesting products. We'll be putting the video interviews up on podfeet.com over the coming weeks, and I think you'll really get to like them. I'm hoping to feed the audio into the feed as well, so we'll get it in both ways. And we made a point of telling the interviewees that we were also recording this for audio. So there'll be audio and video available for you. But the best part about Blog World Expo for Steve and me is absolutely hanging out with our friends. A good number of the Mac Roundtable crew were able to attend, and we really miss those who weren't able to be there this year. But a real highlight for us was that we were also able to meet, in real life, Rod Simmons and Rob Dunwood of the Simple Mobile Review podcast. They joined up with a Mac Roundtable dinner we had, and they had a blast. I have to say, by the end of the dinner, it felt like Rob was actually considering converting from Windows to the Mac. He's, kind of been leaning that way, and to be surrounded by the great Mac community seemed to be just the kind of nudge he needed to come back to the fold. So bottom line is, I like Blog World. There were a lot of things to like about it. I think they have some improvements they could make, and it was just great to get together with some old friends. So speaking of Rod, how about we start off with a review from him?
Hi, Allison and fellow Mozilla Castaways. This is Rod Simmons from the Simple Mobile Review Podcast. This week, I'd like to review with you guys a product called DocScanner. But first, as always, let's establish the problem to solve. Maybe you travel a lot for work. Maybe you meet a lot of people and get business cards. Or maybe you actually work for yourself, but you need to keep a lot of receipts for tax purposes. Enter a product like DocScanner. What DocScanner does is it leverages the camera in your iOS device to essentially take a photograph of a receipt, and then it kind of scans across that receipt to increase and give you a better quality image. It's actually amazing what you can get out of that. But the most important thing is that as you put DocScanner over a receipt or a business card, you'll actually see this box coming around like the receipt saying, is this the item you want here? Once you hit scan, it actually then scans over just that small region to give you a finer, crisper image of that receipt or business card or whatever the item is you're deciding to take a picture of. So, for example, whenever I go buy something at Best Buy, because they're not as sophisticated as the Apple Store where they could email me the receipts where I don't have to worry about tracking it, I'll actually take all my Best Buy receipts and I scan them into DocScanner. So if I ever need a Best Buy receipt, I know that they're captured or stored inside a DocScanner. I can then take those receipts and I can email them to myself in a zip file or a PDF or however I see fit, a JPEG image, for example. For me, the way I use DocScanner is that when I leave on a business trip, let's say that I'm going to Miami, Florida, I'll create when I get to the airport, for example, I'll get my first receipt because I want to grab some food at the airport. So I'll pull out my camera before I leave the counter and I'll take a picture of the receipt. And then I'll name this notebook, if you will, of receipts, Miami, Florida, so that I know it's associated with a particular trip. And then throughout the entire trip, whether it be a gas receipt, food receipt, or even a hotel receipt, or potentially even something like a rental car receipt, I'll just keep scanning those and adding those to my documents. Once I'm done with all my receipts and I'm ready to get those, you can just hit the forward it to me and I'll just have it send it and drop it over to me via email. So I can choose to have a PDF, a JPEG file, and it just sends it right over to me. Makes it tremendously easy to manage and not lose receipts. Now, I'm fortunate that in my job, I don't have to actually keep the physical receipt. They only want me to send in scanned copies of the receipts. Sometimes you actually have to keep the physical copy. I look at this in that kind of a model as a way to have a backup of a receipt. You lost the real receipt, but you do have a scanned copy because you kept it in DocScanner. It's also phenomenal for keeping yourself organized for tax reasons. So I also use it if I go on trips that are related to my blogging business or related to other businesses that I have. I scan those receipts, and then I keep them in a folder called Tax 2011, Tax 2012, so I can actually provide all that to my accountant when it's tax time. So regardless of what your need is going to be for DocScanner, if you do have a need to keep digital copies of receipts or quickly make digital copies, it's far better than just using the built-in camera and then trying to manually crop around an image after the photograph is taken. It can drop them right into your photo library. But for me, I like to quickly get those pictures, store them all in DocScanner, and then most importantly, every week after I'm done with a business trip, send those over to myself, publish them into my expense report system, and quickly get paid back. With DocScanner, I've never lost a receipt. Now, the reason why I actually started using DocScanner is I was on a business trip one time. I went to a Starbucks. I grabbed a juice and a bagel, and they gave me my receipt, and I grabbed my receipt, my bagel, my juice, and I put the receipt in the same hand as my juice. And you can imagine being in Southern California, walking outside with a nice cold juice into nice warm air, the juice bottle started to get wet, my receipt got wet, and it was illegible. And that was when I realized that a product like DocScanner would come in really handy for me. I downloaded it immediately when I got in the car, and I've never looked back. It's a great product. There's a DocScanner also for Android, and if you're a person running like a platform like Windows Mobile, there are DocScanning applications for that. I don't remember how much this was in the App Store, and I tried to go back and look, and of course, since I've already purchased it, it doesn't show me the price. So I'll trust that Allison will find the price of DocScanner. I think it's like $3.99 or $4.99, but for me, it was worth every penny because if you lose receipts frequently, one lost receipt from McDonald's will definitely make up for the cost of purchasing a product like DocScanner. Hopefully, you guys enjoy this one.
Rod, this is absolutely awesome. I hate keeping track of receipts when I travel. I usually keep an envelope in my purse and get nearly 75% of the receipts in there by the time I get home. I'm always stuffing them in various pockets of my purse and it's a mess and some are wadded up my wallet and I never know where anything is. Then when I get back to the office, I have to troop down to the multifunction copier, laboriously log into my Windows domain account using this nasty touchscreen. I mean, it's just really awful. And then I have to scan each receipt into an email to send to my assistant. By the way, my assistant won't allow me to do my own expense reports because the one time I tried to do it on my own, I kind of botched it so badly it took her three times as long to fix it as if she'd done it herself. I'm not saying I did it on purpose, but if I had wanted to do it on purpose, this would have been the perfect way to do it, to get her to do it for me. She's just a sweetheart. Anyway, I think it's best if we all stick with what we're good at, don't you? Well, I did look up DocScanner, and it's $4.99 for the iPhone, and I put a link to the iPhone version in the iTunes Store, and a link to it in the Mac App Store as well. Now, I should tell you that the Mac version is $15, so quite a bit steeper for that, and I'm not sure that's the handiest way to scan something in anyway with your camera on your Mac. I also put a link in the show notes to the DocScanner website where you can get it for both Android and Nokia phones. Happy receipt scanning, everyone. Well, you know, the Nocilla Castaways are a very bright bunch. I know you guys are a great resource for your friends. You help them to use all your friends to use their computers, don't you? I'm betting you write them emails telling them how to use their software, or how to connect to their networks, or how to do something in their operating system. If you haven't bought ScreenSteps or Clarify yet to help you with that, you are torturing yourself unnecessarily. If you were to buy either of those tools, you'd be more efficient, you'd create better instructions, and your family and friends would think you're twice as brilliant as they do now. It's documented, twice as brilliant. Now here's the really good part. You'll find that you want to teach them things. You want to make short little lessons for them. I'm not making this up. I am not joking. I've seen this happen to people, myself included. Please make yourself happy and go over to BlueMangoLearning.com and check out both ScreenSteps and Clarify and find the product that's both for you. Or if you're nuts like a lot of us, get them both. Well, I've been using the iPad since it first came out, and I'm pretty comfortable with the on-screen keyboard. I'm a touch typist, and it's not a great experience, but if it's between lugging my 5-pound MacBook Pro around at a conference and using the iPad keyboard, it is a much better choice. When I was at All Things D this year, I typed about 10,000 words on it in the 2.5-3 days that we had out there. And, you know, it had some errors here and there, but it worked out just fine. Now, I've heard a lot of people review keyboard cases, and to me, they always seem to produce more problems than they fixed. The cases always add a lot of weight and a lot of bulk to the iPad, which to me diminishes the value of the iPad considerably. I mean, you know, you might as well carry a laptop around if you're going to do all of that. The other thing is they always seem kind of floopy to me. You know, they always seem kind of pieces swinging around and, I don't know, not really, really happy with them. My friend Linda came into work to proudly show me her new iPad case keyboard combo. I couldn't believe how awful it was. I didn't even ask her who made it because it was just so bad. Like, the thing was like trifold, so there were three layers of bulky padded case. It was heavy because the case included the keyboard. It was really clumsy to flip around and use the iPad as intended. It was really awful. She seemed to like it, though. I mentioned to her that the only Bluetooth keyboards I'd consider would be standalone, where you didn't have to lug them around all the time. Now, I have an Apple Bluetooth keyboard for my Mac Mini, and I tried it with the iPad, but somehow it just didn't really fit for me. As elegant as the Apple keyboard is, it's full size, which is just too big. I noticed a lot of confusion in the family room, too, when the iPad and the iMac were fighting over the keyboard, so that wasn't good. Well, anyway, Linda told me that she'd also bought the Zag Keys Solo keyboard and would be willing to bring it in to show it to me. Well, I wrote this entire review using the Zag, and I am loving it. It's standalone, but it's tiny. It's the exact width of the iPad, which is just perfect. As I said, I'm a touch typist, but the key widths seem to work great even for my size 9 hands. That's pretty giant for a woman if you don't know sizes, but it's maybe medium size for a man. So the Zag has a slot right behind the keyboard that fits the iPad, so it stands up really nicely at a really nice angle. And it has a rubber edge on one side, so it keeps the iPad from slipping and getting damaged on the screen side. Now, I keep saying iPad, but this keyboard is definitely made for Android as well. Many of the keys have this little Android guy on them, so it definitely has some unique functionality for those kind of tablets. Speaking of keys, the Zag Keys Solo has arrow keys. It has a command key. It has cut and paste keys. It even has a home key that takes you to home on the iPad. A lock key that actually locks the iPad. You can even control the volume from the keyboard, too. You can control video and audio playback with play, pause, fast forward, and reverse. I love having all those functions at my fingertips, you know, as though I had a keyboard. Almost like having a real computer. It really, really brings it up a notch. With all that goodness, though, comes a very strange sacrifice. Autocorrect doesn't. You don't automatically get a capital letter after a period and two spaces. You don't get the apostrophe and contractions automatically, like don't and can't. It doesn't even offer you the correct spelling when you make a mistake. It simply underlines the word after the fact. I think it's really strange that the functionality of the iPad OS changes so dramatically when you add a keyboard. That really surprised me. Kind of bummed me out. The Zag Keys Solo has a battery in it that they claim lasts 2 to 3 weeks during normal use. Is that crazy? When the power light comes on to tell you that it's getting low, the manual says you still have 1 to 2 days left over of power. Crazy, crazy cool. Oh, and it charges via a standard micro USB cable. There's an on-off switch on the keyboard so you can't accidentally be pressing keys when it's in your backpack. Next to the power switch, there's a connect button. Press that while you're in Bluetooth settings on your tablet. You get a little on-screen pop-up with a code you type in, and boom, you're paired. Easy peasy, as Niraj would say. I found that I got used to the Zag Keys Solo instantly. I found it delightful to type on, and I believe it will increase the number of things I do on the iPad, like writing reviews like this while I'm waiting for my haircut. The Zag Keys Solo weighs 11.5 ounces, and you can get it in white, black, or silver. The one I'm using is silver, and it has black keys, so it looks just like a mini MacBook keyboard. You can either purchase it from Zag.com for only $69, or even better, you can use my affiliate link in the show notes to get it for $67 at Amazon. I highly recommend the Zag Keys Solo Bluetooth keyboard.
Dumb.
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 Dumb questions.
Dumb questions. Dumb questions.
How do I?
What is?
How come I always have to?
It's time for Dumb Question Corner.
Well, I sent over a dumb question to Rod Simmons just last week. As I've mentioned before, I enjoy a show called Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott. I noticed recently that in talking about Windows 8, he keeps referring to Win32 and then he'll say WinRT. I was curious what these two things were and why WinRT is all the rage to talk about now. He sent over this answer to my dumb question.
Hi, Allison. This week I was going to actually answer a dumb question. What's the difference between Win32 and WinRT? You should recognize that question because it's one that you actually asked me on Heytel. So to try to avoid getting into like the super technical mumbo jumbo that you read everywhere, I could talk about Zacamel, I could talk about abstraction layers, I could talk about HTML and JavaScript and DirectX and how they interact and native code and all that stuff, but let's break it down to something that a Mac user would get. If you remember, Apple switched platforms, programming platforms, from PowerPC to Intel. And in order to make that transition, they introduced an operating environment called Rosetta, which allowed old PowerPC apps to continue to run and operate on the Intel platform. So let me try to draw a relationship for you. It's not an exact relationship, but it'll help out. Microsoft is introducing support for ARM going into this version, and that's not all the only reason why they invented WinRT. They wanted to re-go back and look at all the challenges they've had with WinRT since it was introduced, around Windows 95, if I remember correctly. That's when apps started porting around the Windows 95 era, so you can imagine 1995 and we're at 2011. It's been a long time that WinRT has been in existence. So when they reimagined Windows, they wanted to solve a lot of core problems. Security is obviously at the heart of some of those problems, where you could sandbox apps, have single folder installs, and users are required to grant access to the file system and a host of other things. And it may sound familiar to you because it seems like, well, isn't that kind of similar to how Mac OS X works? So WinRT essentially is a replacement for Win32 that will exist and they will run side by side in Windows 8. I hope that probably gives you a very basic explanation of it. If you parallel the transitioning from PowerPC to Intel on the Mac side, and transitioning for Microsoft from a legacy environment or programming API of Win32 programming API to WinRT, you can kind of see that parallel that exists. Again, I know that anybody who is super geeky and technical with this would say, man, he's really watering this down. And that was the goal. I wanted to keep this at a level that most people understand. If you need a more detailed explanation, I'd be happy to jump into all the different abstraction layers and how .NET fits in here and all that stuff. But I think if someone's really just trying to understand what's the difference, look at one as being the replacement for the other. We'll probably see Win32 sit around for probably several versions of Windows out just for backwards compatibility. But going forward, the hope is that developers will start to write in the WinRT-rich environment, which will be the environment that can run on both on both the Intel platform as well as the ARM platform. Hopefully this gives a good answer to a dumb question, and hopefully I didn't dumb it down too much.
Thanks for the answer to that, Rod. That is a really, really good explanation. I think I might actually understand it. You know, I judge whether a smart person is actually smart by whether they can explain complicated things to someone with no education at all in their field. If anyone ever blows you off and says, oh, it's just too complicated to explain to you when you ask them a question, that means they don't really understand it at all. Bless you for not talking about abstraction layers, Rod. My head kind of hurts just saying that phrase. I've heard people say it before, I don't want to know what abstraction layers are. That sounds really annoying. Hey, I should mention, I talked about Don McAllister being in the house, but we also had the pleasure of Barry Folk, a good friend of most of the Nosilla castaways, I think. Barry is a guy who lives in Chicago who has a habit of just popping up places. Well, he popped up at Blogworld this year, and I know earlier this year he popped up at a tweet up in Liverpool. He simply loves people he meets on Twitter, and he likes to go over and just say hi. He actually got a chance to meet up with Stu when he was in New York. So never take for granted. Keep your eyes open if you see this really tall, really friendly, nice guy popping up everywhere. He spent a couple days with us, but he unfortunately had to leave before the show got started. So anyway, we had a really fun time with him, and just loved having Barry here. Well, next up, let's hear a very short review from George from Tulsa.
Did you know you can make your own Macintosh icons? Can't you just hear Allison asking, so what problem does that solve? Ever hear a picture is worth a thousand words? First, it's fun to liven up your desktop. Second, a folder that's a memorable image is easier to find and use than OS X's standard, undifferentiated blues. Converting a boring blue folder into Claws of Satan is easy. Just use the free program, Image to Icon, and follow simple step-by-step instructions I made into a ScreenSteps tutorial. Links to the free download of Image to Icon and my ScreenSteps instructions are in Allison's show notes at podfeet.com.
This is, well, lovely, George. Great choice of icons to use Claw of Satan as your folder icon. But hey, however you roll. Well, I remember in the old days, though, you could simply drag a JPEG onto the Git Info folder icon. That's all you had to do. You didn't have to use any fancy pants software to do it. I wonder why and when they changed that. Anyway, Image to ICNS is free, and it's from img2icnsapp.com. And of course, there's a link in the show notes. They also have a $12.90 version that lets you also create iPhone icons, among other things. That's pretty fun, George. I like it. Well, It's week two of my preparation for the blindfold presentation at Macworld. I didn't get nearly as much time to play with the accessibility features of iOS and OS X since I was at Blogworld Expo, but I did figure a few more things out. The main thing I figured out was that the built-in tutorial is not very good. There's a couple of screens I've tried literally 15 to 20 times to do what they said, and it doesn't work. I suppose it's possible I'm doing something wrong, but I really don't think so. I'm reading the instructions, I'm hearing the instructions, I'm following the instructions, and it simply doesn't do what it says. I was getting really frustrated and discouraged because I couldn't get past those screens, so instead I went to the best training ground on earth, YouTube. I found a couple of demonstrations that gave me a few new hints I hadn't learned before. For example, if you use the VoiceOver keys, Command Option, and then type the letter D, it takes you right to the dock and lets you use the arrow keys to move along to pick out an application. Command Option M takes you to the menu in the currently open application. From there, it's a piece of cake to walk across the menus and down them simply using the arrow keys. Just learning to do these two little things helped me get into the bigger picture of how to navigate around the system just a little bit. It's a long haul to go yet, but every little bit helps. And I'd like to thank all of the blind people who have been pouring in, sending me their email addresses and Twitter addresses saying, hey, I'm here to help. I am definitely going to take advantage of that. I guess I want to get as far as I can and figure out where I'm stuck before, bailing and having to beg for help. I will definitely be contacting you guys, though. It's been really, really nice to hear from all of you. It's fantastic. Now, last week I mentioned something on the show, and Rod Simmons sent in an answer to one of my questions about VoiceOver from last week. Let's hear what he has to say.
On episode 336 of the NoCillaCast, you mused a question to yourself, why, once I turned on accessibility options, do the icons on the home screen of my iPhone actually put little boxes around once I select something? So when you asked that question, I think you had a very focus on the presentation you're doing, which is blindfolded, meaning an absolute lack of sight. I have a friend who was born with less rods and cones, which means he has a very low resolution sight or display, if you want to look at it that way. So for him, it's really hard to make out things from a distance. And more importantly, he can actually really pick up on dark colors very well, but when you start looking at very light colors, it's really hard for him to see. So this is where that box comes in really handy. If you look at the accessibility options as being something designed for visually impaired, people who have lower quality sight or really degraded sight, or like my friend, suffering from less rods and cones in their eyes, it actually makes sense. That box actually helps them identify something that's uniquely different, and it makes it jump out just a little bit more for them. Hopefully this helps. And I know that you were just asking the question to yourself, but since it struck a chord with me, I wanted to let you know. Talk to you later.
Well, Rod, that actually makes a lot of sense. I hadn't thought about people who are visually impaired and not yet blind, so that's pretty cool. I also heard somebody say that it helps when a blind person is trying to demonstrate something for a sighted person. It allows them to see where the focus is, since, you're not really moving the cursor around so much. So that's a really good point. I'm glad something like that helps your friend. Well, I got to tell you, I'm loving how much Rod is contributing to the show, but Simple Mobile Review Podcast is a whopping 28 characters. That's a lot of typing. Heck, I typed it already 3 times in this episode, I think, and so that means I typed 84 characters. What if I had a tool? I don't know, some kind of thing that would help me not have to type all those characters. That's right where Text Expander comes in to save the day. I typed out Simple Mobile Review Podcast once. I selected the text, and I clicked Option T. Up pops a window that lets me assign a short keystroke like SMR semicolon, and now I've got Simple Mobile Review Podcast and 4 characters instead of 28. I got to tell you another story about Smile, too. After Blogworld Expo, Don and Barbara came to stay with us. Don and Barbara McAllister, as I mentioned, came to stay with us for a couple of days. While I was working on the ad for Text Expander, Barbara announced that, like, without any prompting at all, she said, "That is my favorite software on the Mac." She explained that she does triage for Don, answering the emails that tend to be repetitive, things like answering emails to people about lost passwords, that kind of thing. She said she would not do this job without Text Expander. She also used to be a personal assistant, and she just wishes she had Text Expander back then. I think that says a lot. An unsolicited testimonial for a product means so much more than listening to me. I was also bragging to Don that, you know, I've saved 212,000 characters since January. He checked his 11-inch MacBook Air, checked the stats on Text Expander. He has saved 600,000 characters on his MacBook Air using Text Expander, and he got it in July. Man, I am a rank amateur on this Text Expander thing, I'm telling you. I thought I got a lot of value out of it. Well, here's another good point, another story. When we were at Blogworld Expo, Don was doing a panel, and in the middle of it, this woman raised her hand and said, "I just realized you're the Don McAllister that I listen to, and thank you for Text Expander." That was pretty good, and Jean McDonald from Smile was in the room, and she was simply beaming and raced over and gave the woman a water bottle, so it was pretty fun. Don has actually done a session on Screencast Online about Text Expander, so that was where this woman found out about it, and it was, you know, it was clear that really struck a chord to her. So you should head on over to smilesoftware.com and get your own copy of Text Expander from Smile. Well, it's that time of the week again. It's time for Chit Chat Across the Pond. And we have another rendition of Down a Blind Alley with Shane Jackson. How are you doing today, Shane?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. You haven't been on the show in forever.
I haven't been anywhere in forever.
I hear you people at Apple have been busy. You've been working on some stuff, huh?
We are always busy and are always working on some stuff. So, yeah, here lately there's been a couple of cool things to be working on, you know?
Yeah. So what I wanted to bring you on for was I've been hearing rumblings that there have been some improvements to at least blind accessibility on iOS 5 and the iPhone 4S. And I wanted to kind of walk through those. And if you know about any other kinds of accessibility out there, improvements, you know, for the deaf or mobility impaired, I thought that'd be cool to talk about, too. So
better than you. Yeah. And well, I don't know. You could probably find better, but let's look at it.
You're who we've got. All right. Yeah. Let's start with iOS 5, maybe. Start there and then talk about the iPhone 4S.
All right. Well, the iPhone 4S, there's not really anything different for blind people except for Siri, of course, which everybody's going crazy over Siri. And
is anybody using it for real stuff yet?
No.
Just talking, still talking dead bodies right now. Okay, good.
Well, yeah, and what time is it? How old am I? How bad is Alabama going to beat Tennessee today? That sort of thing. I don't know. I don't use Siri. I hope everybody that does enjoys it. It's a great service. I'd rather look things up on my phone. I don't want to stand in public and talk to my phone, you know?
Now, what
hey,
about-
phone? Phone. Hey, phone, do you hear me? Hey, phone. And if she says, what, the damn thing's going out the window.
I was on the Mac Roundtable. I was trying to remember who said it. Somebody asked whether, you know, it would work on a plane. And I said, oh, for the love of Pete, I hope it doesn't work on a plane.
I don't know. If she answers the captain, I'm out of there.
Well, but let's think about it for doing reminders, for example. Wouldn't Siri be a spectacular way for you to be able to set up reminders without having to fuss with all the menus and everything?
Probably would, but I'd rather use the menus and everything. I'm just old-fashioned. But, hey, you know, there are plenty of blind people that are going to use this technology. There are plenty of blind people that do talk to their phones. That's one of the things that they enjoy. There's another thing that pops up when you do Twitter or something. There's a dictation, like a microphone now. So you can click and do your, you know, tweets right there. You can talk them, talk email, talk text messages, that sort of thing. So blind people are going to like this. I'm just one of the old-fashioned ones that I'd rather sit here and use a Braille display to go around the screen. I don't even use I don't have an iPhone 4S, first of all. And secondly, I don't use Siri. So
okay. Well, let's get into what you do know about then. Maybe shift over to iOS 5. What can we see in iOS 5 now?
Well, iOS 5 has got some great new tweaks. There are a lot more Braille, in my opinion, there's a lot better Braille accessibility. For one thing that I like that I don't know if many blind people know about is in the past, when you're in the phone app and you go to the dial pad, you know, to dial a keyboard, like your phone number,
mm-hmm.
you had to use your finger to do that, just like sighted people, or you had to go around and feel around the screen and tap and tap and tap and tap. Well, for those of us with Braille displays, the agony was we had to select, you know how on the screen the the numbers are laid out in a dial pad. Well, with the Braille display, you had to go from number to number to number to number to number to tap it. So it was, one was a lot easier to find than, say, seven.
Hey, Shane, I'm going to back you up here because I have no idea what you're talking about using a Braille display with an iPhone.
Are you serious?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, my
God. Is it something you plug into the phone?
No, it's Bluetooth. It's a little device called a Braille display. We've talked about that before with the Mac, but the Braille display is it's a Bluetooth device, and it has a display of Braille cells on the front of it, sort of like a screen. It displays anywhere from 18 cells to 84 cells, depending on the Braille display and the amount of money that you got. Mine is an 18, and yeah, 18. And so what it does is you hook it up by Bluetooth and you pair it and all that good jazz, and you turn speech off inside VoiceOver. You know, VoiceOver normally VoiceOver sounds something like this.
Speech on. Calendar. Messages. Calendar.
Well, what Saturday, I do is turn
October
speech 22nd. Off. Hush. What I do is turn speech off. It's not Siri. Don't worry. She won't answer. I turn speech off like this.
Okay.
Speech off.
And you just heard her say speech off. But Braille is not off. VoiceOver is still very much on.
Oh,
and,
okay.
And yeah, and so now I can go using the keys on the Braille display, messages, calendar, October 22nd, photos, camera, videos, YouTube, maps, weather, notes, reminders.
And you know it's doing that because these Braille keys are popping up and down under your fingers?
That's exactly right. They're digital cells, and they're popping up as I move. And what's cool about this is when I load an iBooks book, the iBooks book is in print. But because of this technology, I'm seeing it in Braille. So I can, read
it. Gosh, are you serious?
Yeah, so I can read a book with you. Sit there, and you can see it, and I can read it along with you. So that is absolutely beyond totally cool awesome.
That's like, that blows my mind. That's amazing. I didn't know you could do that.
Well, you can, and that's what I mean when I refer to Braille technology. And I use it every day, both at work, at home, play, church, school, whatever, wherever I am, whenever I am, however I am. I have a little Braille display around my neck. It's about the size of a tape measure, a little bigger than a tape measure.
Oh.
And I put it around my neck and use the iPhone with it. Or if I'm at work, I'll, you know, hook it up to an iPad or maybe an iPod Touch or maybe the Mac using OS X Lion, whatever. But mainly it's for me, and it's for my use with the iPhone, which is the iPhone 4. And that's what I was referring to when I was referring to Braille technology.
I feel so dense. I know we did talk about it with respect to the Mac, that it plugs in via Bluetooth, and my brain keeps wanting to call it a Braille keyboard because it looks like keys to me, but it is actually a display. But
Now you can use it as a Braille keyboard. There's little keys on here. You're correct. That you can text message with it. You can do your email. You can type in a document. You can, it does both, input, output.
That's crazy. Okay, so now I'm catching up. Okay, so now we're you're using iOS 5, and you've got the VoiceOver off, but you have VoiceOver on, but the voice itself is not yapping at you.
Bingo.
And so you can navigate the display perfectly with that.
Yeah. And
I need to see this.
Yeah, and in the phone app, you can actually now use your Braille display to dial the number. You know where it's got the blank number thing up at the top where when you type it appears like when you type, for instance, 555, the numbers 555 appear up top. Well,
okay,
in a Braille display, with a Braille display, usually you had to go find the number on the screen. You had to go, where is the 7? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, tap. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, tap. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, tap.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, yeah. But I mean, we were happy about that. Hey, we were thrilled. But I discovered the other day by accident that you can actually type the number in, just clickety clickety click, now in Braille, like number 5551212, up pops the number, go down, hit call, and it's done.
Oh, nice. That seems obvious, right?
Absolutely.
Like it should have been that way to start with?
Sure, it's like, why in the world wasn't this in there in iOS 3 or 4? What possessed you to put it in now? I mean, thank you. Let's see. We have access to the Notification Center. Yeah. I like the Notification Center.
So how does that work? Is that spitting out onto your Braille display for you? Or are you listening to that?
Either or. If you're listening to it, it'll speak the notifications as they come out, depending on when you have badges, banners,
sure,
or messages. You know, a message, of course, will interrupt you, and it's annoying, and you always go to disable that. But, like if I'm at work and I'm just twiddling around and I get a Twitter message, it'll say, "Pwong," Twitter message. You know, it'll give me the Twitter message and give me that cool little "Pwong" iPhone sound, because I've got receive mail, you know, as my default Twitter. And so, you can always tell when I get a tweet. And I've got my messages set to do the doorbell, so it's, you know, and people in the store look around, "What? Who's that? What is that? There's no doorbell here." I was like, "Yeah, there is, in my pocket."
Hey, so, Donald Burr sent me a message late last night of something crazy. Have you played with the camera since you got iOS 5?
Yes.
Tell people what it can do for you.
Well, Apple has very coolly made the cameras autofocus now, and I'm still using the 4. I don't have a 4S, but there is a cool feature in the 4S where, let's say I'm wanting to take a picture of my wife, Abby, and I'm over here in the chair. I can look at her with the camera, and it will say face in picture or something like that. I've never heard it, but it's supposed to be like face in center, face, yeah, to left. It will tell me where it is, so I can line it up and then shoot.
Camera that tells the blind whether they're taking a reasonably good picture. I mean, that is insanity.
That's exactly what it is. And for those of us using a 4, we get the autofocus message. So, you know, autofocus. Well, I want to refocus. I'm looking at something different. So I tap the center of the screen, and it says autofocused again. And so I know that I'm hitting the center of the screen is now receiving focus. So we actually have blind people now that are doing photography, but because of the Apple Eye device. And where this comes in handy, really practical, is let's say you're on a street by yourself. You're on a street corner, and you have no idea where you are. Now your wife or your husband or your spouse, whatever, knows the neighborhood you're in. So what you do is you take a couple of photographs, you send them to her either on Twitter or Facebook or email, whatever, and you say, where the bejesus am I? And your wife emails you back and says, "You're to the corner of 3rd and 14th. Ah, I can get home now.
Hey, I just thought of something. You know, if you turned on iCloud to her account, she would be able to see in her photo stream instantly.
She would indeed, provided that the blind person is smart enough to turn photo stream on.
And what would make you think of that? But now, I mean, if you could do this, I mean, this is
crazy.
I'm speechless.
This means.
Now,
it's crazy.
I did have a little trouble with it. After Donald told me about it, I played around a little bit, and it was kind of funny. I had the front-facing camera on, and I'm still not really good with voiceover. I tend to forget when I'm supposed to double-tap or single-tap, but I had the front-facing camera on, and it said, "Really big face."
That must be Steve.
Well, no, it was looking at me because I had the camera right up to my face when I did it. And it was like, face really big.
I wasn't going
to
say that.
I tried to turn it around. And when I did, it looked right at him dead center and said, "No face."
There you go.
So I tried clicking around, and it never did recognize him as a face. I don't know what that means. It seemed to it didn't keep updating, going face center, face center, face center, or anything like that. So
I think you probably have to tap the screen. I'm not sure. I've not had a chance to use it.
Yeah, we got to play around with that some more. But what would make them think that a blind person could take a photo? This is just like there's no boundaries anymore.
There's no boundaries anymore. We can go to the beach, and because of the autofocus feature, even with the 4, we can go to the beach and take pictures of the beach and the sunset and whatever, and put them on Facebook and whatever. I've actually had people say, "Did you take that, or did your wife take that?"
Hmm.
Now that's a compliment in and of itself.
Yeah.
Also, FaceTime. Of course, now we got FaceTime on all our devices,
right?
You know, the modern ones at least, and so FaceTime's awesome. I could actually call you and say, Allison, I'm lost. Look here. This is a landmark here. Do you know where this dumpster is located? Well, sure. You know, you could do it. You could do it that way too.
I played around with Daryl Shandro of the Blind Access Journal. He wanted to show me his computer setup and the way he has things done. And he was trying to explain to me, and I was really not picking it up. And he said, "Well, let's just go into FaceTime." And he pulled this out and showed me how his laptop was actually just like folded up under the desk because he was using it, but he didn't need the display turned on.
The Access Command Center. That's what Daryl has. The command center. Absolutely.
Right.
But we started thinking,
picture, you know, you're getting married and you're racing around the house. You're getting ready to go and you can't find your gosh darn cufflinks. And you know they're in the room somewhere. If you just pop open FaceTime and get somebody sighted on the other end and say, okay, I'm just going to point around the room. You tell me where they are. And bingo, there they are on the bedspread or something that you couldn't find them.
Oh, goodness, I forgot to put my shirt on.
Ooh, that's
Sorry, dear. Not yet. Oh, well. So that's a little bit of accessibility. Let's go over some very few things here. There's really the voices are new. They've got large voices now that sound, quote, unquote, better. I don't agree.
Where do you get to choose the voices?
You don't. I mean, you choose the different languages. You know, up under voiceover, there's a setting for language, different languages. So if you speak Spanish, you want a Spanish voice. But what they have now is what's called a regular voice and a compact voice, with the compact voice actually being a small version, you know, so that it would be less intense on the processor. I actually use the compact version sometimes because I don't like the voice that they chose for American English. I'm sorry. It's just not
pleasant to the ear.
Yeah, it's not pleasant to my ears. My ears aren't the best in the world anyway. But anyway, what else? There is a new feature called assistive touch. Have you looked at this for motor impaired people?
No.
You can actually move your fingers around the screen and it will bring up pop-ups or something. I don't really know how it works. I'd like to hear from any motor impaired people, you know, like hand coordinated, whatever, people listening to this podcast, because it's supposed to be for like people with cerebral palsy and other things where they can just touch the iPhone and have things pop up and vibrate and move and, I don't know. It's a very unique thing. I've heard of non-impaired people using it, but I've never have used it. There's also a hearing mode now, a hearing aid mode.
Hang on a second. Patrick Hennebry has been talking to me about motor impairment because he's got he's got one good hand, but then sometimes he has trouble with that, and so he's definitely interested in that. So maybe we can get an update from him.
Assistive touch. I'd like to know. It's under general settings, general accessibility. There's visual, hearing, and then physical impairment. So tell them to turn assistive touch on and let us know how that works. Also, real quick, hearing aid mode. For those of us who use hearing aids on a daily basis, it works really well to, you know, to keep the sound out of the call.
So what is that? That's something else down in accessibility there?
It is. It's under hearing. Yeah. It's
does
under
it cut
hearing.
Down the feedback? Or
it does. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Oh.
And so that's nice. And then, like I said, there aren't many what I would call voice. Oh, one of the big things for voice improvement. Oh, yeah. How could I forget that? Let's say you're on a button. And when you're in some applications, some of our friendly developers tend to forget that there's a blind audience or don't know that there's a blind audience. So you arrow across, or, you know, I'm used to the old DOS days. You move across with your finger, and it says button, 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 you know, or image, button, image.
Yeah.
I don't know what the hell this button does. Well, what you do is you get brave and you hit the button, figure out what it is, and then you go into VoiceOver and you label that button. You say, this is Allison's big face button. And she'll say, Allison's big face button.
No.
Yeah, custom labels. We've been asking for that for years, and finally it's here. We got custom labels. You can label an app that is unlabeled. So, for instance, Get Glue, or, you know, the Glue app. The Get Glue app has a lot of buttons that are not labeled by default. Well, we all go in and label them our own way, and Get Glue continues to talk from then on. You know, it's got buttons now that are labeled. Foursquare is the same one.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's one of the big, big, big new features. Let's see. I want to cover everything real quick. I believe that's the biggest feature. Changing languages on the fly with VoiceOver is nice. there's a new typing mode that's been around for a while now called touch typing, where you simply move your finger around the screen, and when you get on the letter you want, you lift your finger and it types it in.
Okay, I've tried to figure that out, and I cannot get that to work.
Because you don't use it on a daily basis.
But I can't get it to work once. Like, I put my finger over a letter and I lift up and just nothing happens. Is it a specific thing you have to turn on?
Yes. When you're in an edit field and you got VoiceOver on,
yeah,
you're going to see typing mode as one of the, when you use a little rotor thing, you know, with your fingers like a radio dial, you twist them.
Yeah, see, I've never been able to figure out that rotor thing either.
You sighted people.
anyways, you called us, right?
What you do when you're on a letter, double tap that letter. You know, when you get on the letter, just double tap it. It'll enter it.
Accessibility. Okay, wait a minute. I turned her on and now I can't make her be quiet. Shh. You hush. Say that again.
Two fingers on the phone will shut her up. When you're in an edit field, you have two modes of typing. One mode of typing is where you find the letter, you tap it, then you double tap it. That'll enter the letter. Tap, tap.
Right. That I figured out.
That's called standard typing. Now, touch typing is where you move around the screen with your finger, and when you get on a letter you want, you lift your finger up.
Okay.
And blind people are using that now. Some of us like that better than standard typing.
Now,
some of us don't.
Do you have to toggle between those two modes, or does it do it?
You do. No, you have to toggle between the two modes.
Okay, so you have to change that in some setting. That must be, I've never found that setting.
Well, it's not under VoiceOver. You have to do it right there in the edit field. That's why you need to learn that rotor, Allison. That's your next homework assignment.
Learn the rotor. By the way, if people hear me typing, that's because I'm typing what Shane's saying, so we have some show notes for the deaf. So touch time. So you move around, then lift your finger.
And then lift up.
Need the rotor to do
really
this.
Handy if you're using your phone to dial and you don't have a braille display, use standard. Use touch typing. Get on the number, lift up, beep, you'll hear the touch tone.
How did you say to shut her up? Because I want to try this while you're talking and I keep...
It's a two-finger tap on the phone will shut her up.
Just single tap?
Single tap, two fingers.
She's not shutting up. To activate the selected item. She's still talking to me.
VoiceOver practice button.
You're in VoiceOver, so you don't even need to... Yeah,
you got to get out first?
Yeah, you got to get out first.
Okay, let me get out. Two-finger tap. Okay, hush.
Settings. Message.
No, she's still yapping at me, Shane.
I use a two-finger tap. Two-finger tap will shut her up. Two-finger tap.
Not double tap?
No.
No, she's still...
Let's see.
Three-finger tap me?
Settings.
All right, two-finger tap. Here we go. Wait a minute. Let me make sure my phone's still on.
Speech on.
All right, here we go. Listen to this.
Calendar. Messages.
Okay, now it started playing music, too.
Yeah, because you double tap.
What did I double tap?
Double tap.
Okay, double tapped it. That stopped it.
That stopped the music. A single tap with two fingers, in theory, stops VoiceOver.
Speech off.
Not for me. Okay, yeah. Well, we don't need to keep working on it. I'll figure that out at some point.
That's hilarious. But anyway... You want to do the rotor thing, and what the rotor thing is, you put two fingers, the very tips of your fingers, not the pads of your fingers, but the tips of your fingers, like a radio dial, like you're about to turn it, and okay. You twist it.
Huh. And you do that in edit field mode.
Yes. Okay. You can do it anywhere on the phone, and it'll go characters, words, headings, line, you know, depending on where you are.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's cool. They've added that. I like that. That's actually been around since 4. And that's very nice. Let's see. I'm just trying to figure out the usual things are in accessibility, the mono audio, the Bluetooth, you know, that sort of thing. Gosh, I just don't have time to go through all of them. There's some minor bug fixes. The A5 chip is a lot faster than the 4, so that's why they added the bigger voices. I think the 4S is a lot faster than the 4. Again, I'm hopefully getting my 4S at the end of next week. So let's see. The wireless activation. You know, now we used to have to plug it in when you get your iPhone.
Oh yeah. You mean okay. Wireless sync? You mean?
Yeah, but you know how when you used to get your phone, you had to bring it home and plug it up and enter all your, you know, name, address, you know, all
oh,
that.
Oh, activation for brand new ones.
Yeah, see, now when you do that, you take it out of the box, you turn it on, and it comes up and says, slide to configure, slide to set up, and you begin to set up your, you know, it says English. Well, if you do a triple-click home, which it should have been this way in the beginning, but it wasn't. If you do a triple-click home, VoiceOver pops up. VoiceOver on. So a blind person can now take their phone literally out of the box, press the power button and hold it for 3 seconds, wait for the Apple to come up, you know, give it time, go ahead and hit the triple-click home. Here comes VoiceOver. You can activate your phone by yourself with no sighted help.
Wow.
VoiceOver stays on, and triple-click home is automatically set to VoiceOver. Now, if you don't do that in the beginning, triple-click home is set to off.
Oh, okay.
But Apple has made it possible now for blind people to literally activate their phone right out of the box. We're the only mobile operating system that I know of that you can do that.
Yeah, I haven't been hearing great things about Android, unfortunately. That doesn't sound like they're doing much, or iPhone 7 home phone.
They're
7
not.
Home.
Windows 7 has no accessibility that we know of. Android is not there yet. They're getting there. They actually have, I mean, you have to get third-party apps to make it very much accessible. I think you can actually work with your contacts and stuff, you know, out of the box, but you have to get help usually setting the phones up. I really don't know enough about it, and I'd rather not comment on it because I've not used an Android, never am going to use an Android, and so I'd rather let a blind person who uses Android comment on that because I would
sure.
be wrong.
sure.
I would be wrong, and I don't mind being wrong, you know?
No problem. Hey, well, I really appreciate you making the time for us today. I know you've got a short schedule here, so I will let you go. But I hope you'll come back again soon. And anytime you find something cool and you just want to give us a quick tip or anything, I love chatting with you, Shane.
You guys are absolutely awesome on this podcast. Don't hesitate to send the emails, but it's a different email address, Shane_Jackson@me.com. That is an iCloud address, Shane_Jackson@me.com. That's how they can get in touch with me, Allison. You're awesome as always. Excellent podcast. And I appreciate you asking me to be on here again. And I'm hopefully it won't be so long next time.
All right. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks.
Well, you can tell I love talking to Shane. He is such a cool guy. I get such a kick out of talking to him. I always feel energized after talking to him because he's a lot of fun. Well, I'm afraid that is going to wind us up for this week. Many thanks to our sponsors for helping pay the bills. Please jump over to BlueMangoLearning.com and check out Screen Steps and Clarify. And don't forget to go to Smile and check out all of the great software over there, including TextExpander. Really, Don? 600,000 characters saved since June? Or was it July? Anyway. Let's see, don't forget to send in your dumb questions, comments, and suggestions by emailing me over at allison@podfeet.com. And be sure to follow me on Twitter @podfeet. I also contribute a lot over on Google+, so be sure to get over there and circle me up. We're having a lot of fun in there. And if you want to have the most fun at all, join in on the live show by going over to podfeet.com/live on Sunday nights at 5 p.m. Pacific time and join the incredibly friendly and enthusiastic Nosilla Castaways. And you never knew who's going to be in there. We had the internationally famous Don McAllister in there this week, so it's been a lot of fun. Thanks for listening and stay subscribed.